call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.
Broadcasting from Bashani Radio, iHeart, iTunes, Spotify, live from New York City, this is the Linda Monroe Show, and I am Linda Monroe. If you want to know more about me and what I do, go to lindamonroe.com. Don't forget to go to Google Play and download the Bashani Radio app and listen to our broadcast on the go. We're going global. Also sponsored by Rashad Details. Have wheels will clean. Today I got an awesome guest for you. She's going to drop some nuggets on you to let you know how to live a better life. I will be interviewing Minister Diana Powell. She's a native of Raleigh, North Carolina. While attending the Wake County Public School System, she acquired the prestigious position of class vice president. While attending Millbrook Senior High School, she brings ready energy, I mean ready energy, and a strong sense of purpose to her passion as CEO, owner of Justice Serve North Carolina Incorporated. Diana worked in the criminal justice system 10 years as a correctional lieutenant with the Department of Corrections. Through a period of 4 years, she developed programs as needed to meet the nutritional needs of the low-income and minority families. She served with particular focus on specified segments of this population, such as the youth who are going through the criminal justice system. Motivation and passion is a key factor to her personal and professional life. Diana says what makes her get up in the morning is knowing that she can make a difference in someone's life to help prevent them from remaining in the criminal justice system. She also worked and traveled with Dr. Juanita Bynum for 3 years on the logistic team, a member of Lost Sheep Outreach Ministry under the leadership of Pastor Phil Brickle. And in 2015, she was honored as Raleigh, North Carolina Hometown Hero by TCB Magazine. Diana is also a licensed minister that focuses mainly on outreach ministry. She sits on the board of A. Philip Randolph Institute of Raleigh as a chaplain, former vice president of the Friends Committee. Diana is the organizer of Bring Back the Village, Empowering Our Community program that meets on Monday nights. She's also a school board member at Torchlight Academy Public Charter School. She attends monthly meetings at the Haven House Gang Intervention Prevention Program. She's a community advocate and activist. She is currently involved in the judicial system and the community of organizing expungement and driver's license restoration for those who have been oppressed by their criminal record. She's a certified ex-offender employment specialist through the United States Federal Prison in Butner, North Carolina. Organized the movement on July 11, 2016, within the Southeast Raleigh, where she was heavily involved in a gang truce called Between the Crips, the Blood, Folks 52 and 74 Hoovers. Diana works tirelessly with those individuals who are re-entering back into society from being incarcerated, either in jails or prisons, with jobs, housing, life skills, and critical thinking skills, and offering mentoring programs. She is a mother of twin sons and one daughter and a grandmother of three. She's a motivational speaker who cares for families who have lost loved ones during a gang violence or senseless killings. Her passion is real and true, and she has dedicated her life to bringing unity within our community as well as others. She loves her community, especially the youth who are our future generation. Her motto is, "It's not a moment, but a movement." Good afternoon, Minister Powell. How are you?
All right. Good afternoon. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm blessed and highly favored, girl. You are working in North Carolina, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Every day. Dedicated my life to it.
Well, that's awesome because many of us don't learn our purpose, but it seems like you've learned yours.
I know my purpose.
Great, great. Well, tell listeners what has been the lowest point in your life and how that has propelled you to where you are today. And also we'll be talking about the COVID-19 in our prison systems.
Okay. One of the lowest points in my life is working with gang members and ex-gang members. And there was a young man by the name of James E. Austin. He was a high-ranking Blood member. And while I was teaching over in the jail, him and I, we gained a relationship. He was facing 29 years for attempted murder. And he saw the work that I was doing in the community. And he basically said, when I get out, I want to be able to do what you do. And so I helped him navigate through his case. All his charges were dismissed. He came back out, and he began to work in the community. He became a community activist, advocate. But sadly to say, on July the 2nd, 2014, he was tragically killed. That was a very low point for me. I got to a point I felt like I wanted to give up, but my spirit wouldn't allow me to give up. James' spirit pushes me to keep going. I'm still, in the trenches working with individuals because it is just, James became like a son to me. And to see him, that happening to him, it took me to a place I didn't think I could would ever experience in life, but I did. So that was a low point.
Oh, wow. I bet that was devastating. He just came to turn his life around. And that seems the way it always happened, Minister Powell. Every time somebody make that decision to step out and do what God has put them here to do, sometimes they just get taken right away.
Exactly. And that's
so
exactly what...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, and that's exactly what happened with James.
Oh, but at least it propelled you to keep his dream alive. So that's a good thing. So let's get on this COVID-19 in our prison system.
Yes, ma'am. Well, in the work that we do around Just to Serve and Second Chance Alliance, in my experience of working in the prison, I worked for 10 years as a correctional lieutenant. And so I seen both sides. But after COVID-19 hit, it hit hard, and we knew that if it ever hit inside of the prison system, that lives would be lost. And our concern was, those individuals, they're doing, they're paying for their mistake, and they didn't sign up for the death penalty to die in there. And that was one of our main concerns. We were concerned about the social distancing. We was concerned about individuals returning home and if they had gotten home before it really hit into inside the prison, that they could avoid being infected with this virus. So we have signed on to a lawsuit so far, moving through the court system as we speak.
Okay, so what advice would you give someone that has a family member, husband, or child in prison? What advice would you give them how to handle this situation?
First of all, they need to write letters, encourage them, let them know that there are people on the outside that are fighting very hard for their safety. And also they need to contact their prison system, those officials that are in charge of making those decisions, the probation and parole board, the government, and the system, to making sure that they bring attention to their loved ones that are sitting in there, because, like I said, they didn't sign up for a death penalty. They want their loved ones to come home and come home safely. That is what the prison system, that is one of their responsibilities, because that person's life is in their it's in their care. That's what they're hired to do, is to take care of the safety and the well-being of those offenders that are sitting in the system.
And what would you say to the victims of those people that's incarcerated for?
The victims, again, and we have to balance that. We have to open up that communication because we work along with our district attorney here, and that is, you know, has been some of her concern about what about the victims. Regardless, you know, what happened, it can't change it. It's still a life, right? And
right.
So, again, we have to be mindful. We have to keep the lines of communication open and you know, build that relationship with the victim. If the victim family does not want to be involved, but still we have to express that issue that it's still a life. And they are not sentenced to death. If they were sentenced to death, they were sentenced to death. But these individuals have not.
Okay, now you also mentioned that you did something with expungement. Exactly which people benefit from that in your organization?
Well, lately we just we sent a bill through our legislators, Senate Bill 562, which was giving us more relief on expunction and driver's license restoration. The expunction, when we first started doing it about 4 years ago, only ones that was qualifying for an expunction was low-level felons and some misdemeanors. But what happened is we pre-registered individuals, and we ended up within 3 weeks, we registered over 3,456 people to see
wow.
if their records would qualify for an expunction. We already knew that it wouldn't. A lot of people would not be eligible. But we want to send a loud message to our legislators that there was a need, because a person that committed a crime when they were 16 and 17 years old, it was still holding them hostage, that they cannot move forward in life, obtaining housing, getting jobs, education. Those things were holding them back. So we wanted to send that message. So what happened, we lobbied our legislators. We were able to get that bill passed. It took 10 years to get that bill through legislators. And so now the bill is, all dismissed charges will automatically come off your record, because that was holding a lot of people back. When they were going applying for jobs, when they were going applying for housing, they pull your record and it still says, yes, it was dismissed. So that already raises a red flag. They don't want to deal with you. Somewhere you will entangle in that criminal justice system. So that was a barrier. So now with our new law, dismissed charges will not even hit your record. And also, we took, there's some relief on the time frame. If an individual had something on their record, it shouldn't take 10, 15, 20 years. It should not take that long for you to be able to get that off your record. So some relief that is there. Now it's 5 years, 3 years, and some of it will come off automatically.
Oh, that is so awesome. That is so awesome because, like you said, you shouldn't have to pay for a crime that you've been in prison for 40 years for the rest of your life. So I'm pretty excited y'all did that in North Carolina, and How did you get involved with gang members? Was James the gang member that helped propel you into that area or not?
Yes, I knew nothing about gangs. It was James. He taught me, he walked me through everything. And so when James passed, his we didn't want to, stop what he was doing, because the morning he was assassinated, he was doing a documentary of his life, being in the gang, and so he was setting up troops that morning, which was July the 2nd, and he was killed. That meeting supposed to have taken place at 8 o'clock, July the 2nd. Mm-hmm. That morning of the 2nd at 4 o'clock, that's when he was killed. Oh. And so his uncle, his family, we didn't want to leave what he had started. We didn't want to leave that there. So his uncle stepped up, and which his uncle was also highly involved in the gang. And I was working at Torchlight Academy. We started a gang program over there during the summertime. And those guys came and they mentored, they talked to the kids about not being in the gang. And so also that was around the time we had a lot of police shooting, killing our black people, right? Mm-hmm. And so one day during their sessions of them mentoring at the school, we had the police officers to come, and the kids was talking about, police killing black people. And so I asked the question, well, what do y'all feel about gang members? And then they said, gang members kill black people too. So that was like a light bulb came on to those young men, those men that were there. And uh-huh. They was like, oh, no, Miss Powell, we don't want that. We don't want that message to be, the young people, the kids think that way. And so that's when this young man decided he was no longer going to do any more recruiting. He went to all of the gangs that was in North Carolina and basically told them, look, we got to stop. And so they made a declaration to the youth that they would be able to play freely on their playgrounds without the threat of being under gunfire. And so that's what we did. He called all of them. So one Monday during our Bring Back the Village meeting, we was at one of the parks. And he promised me, he said, Miss Powell, I'm getting ready to show you something. And when I looked up and I saw all the gang members coming with their colors and everything united together, it was a movement. It was powerful.
Wow. I know you couldn't believe what you were seeing.
I could not. And it was hundreds of people out there. Even the kids was out there. They threw a big cookout. It ended up being a whole community event, celebration.
Oh, wow. Now, how in the world did you get up to work and travel with Dr. Juanita Byram?
Well, that was when I was traveling with Juanita is when I left the prison system. And then I started working at St. Augustine's College, and I was working in history and political science. And Juanita was coming to North Carolina to do a conference, and they needed some tablecloths. And so a friend of mine was working with her in Georgia. So she said, well, hold on, I got someone that can show y'all how to, find a tablecloth. And so I did. I met with them, and we went to purchase a tablecloth, and I was invited to the conference, and that's how I got started.
Oh, wow. Now, how was your experience working in the Department of Corrections?
It was challenging. It was never a dull moment. You never found the same day twice. It was always, something going on. But I always kept in mind, no matter what they did, I never judged. I never sat in judgment. And the gift that helped me get through was I had the ability to listen. A lot of them just want you to listen. And that's what I did. And I was able to move up in the ranks. I started out as an officer. I worked third shift, and then I moved up to sergeant, and then I became lieutenant. And then I knew my time was up, my season was up, and I went on and I resigned and started working in two law firms. And then working around that family law gave me more insight about people's lives, what they go through. I saw a lot of divorces coming through. And then being around in the courtroom, it helped me to notice that there was a lot of injustice that was going on around our judicial system. So working at the prison, like I said, it was never a dull moment. But I had to I realized that these are people's lives. It didn't matter what they did. I passed no judgment.
So you actually saw them as people and not as numbers, because that's far beyond in the prison system.
Exactly. I saw them as people and not as a number.
Now, did you have the opportunity to work in both men and women prisons?
Yes, I did. I served on our prison emergency response team. Was a hostage negotiator. I was a sharpshooter. I did a lot of training inside of our men's facility, especially down at Noose Correctional Central. We did cell extraction. We did cell searches. We was on death row. I did men and female.
So you have had a variety of experience. Now, this was after, when you worked at the law offices, was this after the Juanita Byram situation or before?
No, that was before.
Okay. And you worked there how long?
At the law firms?
Yes.
2 years.
And that didn't inspire you to become a lawyer?
So many people, you know, they tried to get me to go back to law, you know, go to law school. I'm a mover, you know. I like to be out. I like to be out in the community. So I just didn't want to commit myself to that kind of study. But what I did do is created a program where I'm an instructor and I facilitate and I train the community to be community court advocates. So they go in the courtroom, and they're court watchers. So they watch. And so we work along beside with our judicial system, our public defender, our district attorney, our hired attorney, and the judge. So we're like the liaison around all of them. So it's like law work, but we're not lawyers.
Okay. Because I know when I moved back to North Carolina, I was instrumental in doing a teen court, which allowed the teen to just do community service instead of becoming incarcerated. Do y'all have something like that in Raleigh?
Yes, we have teen court. Yes, we do.
Good, 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 because I think we should just stop them before. Well, we need to stop them before they even get to teen court, but I think that was definitely a good program where they'll be able to turn their lives around without getting connected through the judicial system. Now, with the highlight of the George Floyd murder in Minnesota, do you feel that that's going to change our criminal justice system at all?
I am optimistic. I know here in North Carolina, we've been in conversation with our judicial system. There are some things that I am planning on putting before our judicial system, especially around our plea deals. We need to change that.
Yes.
So I am optimistic with the death of, with the murder of George Floyd. It has to be. If we're going to ask for anything, this is the time to be asking. This is the season.
Yes.
We need to be asking for everything.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with you on that point.
Yes, and so my thing is those plea deals, North Carolina is known to be a plea deal state. 98% of people that are sitting in our prison and jail are there on a plea deal, guilty or not guilty.
Well, I hope you can get that done because, like you said, 98%, that's a high percentage.
Very high.
But I guess that's the way they can keep our prisons filled, too.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, they just don't want to waste money on a jury trial. But also, talking about jury trial, I was reading the Constitution, and what I've observed in the courtroom is a lot of time we're not tried if the defendant decides to go to court by a jury of our peers. How do you think this situation might enhance that?
Well, it definitely needs, you know, it's all about being what's fair and what's right. We got to rewrite the law. And that's, like I said, about the Second Chance Act. We can march until our shoes fall off. But until we get in there and start changing some laws, policy, and procedures of how things are done, we're going to continue to stay in the same place that we are in. So the jury trial stuff, it has to change. But we have to educate. We got to educate our people. Who are we voting? Our power is in our vote. Who are we putting in those seats to make those decisions around our judicial system?
Yeah, I totally agree with you that education is the situation. And my last guest last week, that's what I was telling him. You know, you can register. I don't care how many voters you register. We need to educate them on the registration process and teach them how to do the research on the candidate and just don't put people in there because of color and stuff like that.
Exactly. And we just experienced that about 2 years ago with our sheriff. We had our first sheriff had been in there, I think, over 16 years, Caucasian, some things that was being done. That we had a high-profile case with Kyron Hinton, who was brutally beaten and bitten by a dog, by the sheriff's dog. And the sheriff did not want to fire. We were calling for the firing of that deputy. And he felt like the deputy did not do anything wrong. Kyron was having a mental health breakdown. And that sheriff, that deputy, literally just told the dog, you know, bite, you know, get him.
Mm-hmm.
And so the sheriff at that time, we was calling for him, you know, you got to get rid of him. He said, no, I'm not. So I approached him and I told him, I said, if you don't get rid of Broadwell, we're going to get rid of you. And he said, well, Diana, you do what you have to do. I said, okay. So, and then we had an African-American male who came and asked. He said he wanted to run for sheriff, and we was like, okay. And, you know, we put some things. Look, this is what we need. And I had the program that was still inside of the jail, just to serve. And so we rallied. I mean, we helped educate the community. We got people to the polls. We did it all. This, our current sheriff now, beat the other sheriff by a landslide. I mean, it wasn't no just, okay, you beat him by a couple thousand votes. No.
Mm-hmm.
We whooped his behind, right? And even with the, with our African-American sheriff and, you know, he ran on the platform that our programs will be able to continue to stay in the jail, that he will have an open door policy, that we will be able to come in and sit down and talk to him at any given time. You know, we were excited. We got a black sheriff. Oh yeah, some changes are gonna come. You're gonna treat our people different inside of the jail. You're gonna allow us to come in and educate them. But Lord and behold, when he got that seat, we met with him one time, and we have not met with him again. He don't
minister
answer our
Powell.
Phone. He doesn't answer our phones. He doesn't return text messages, absolutely nothing. He would not let any of our programs back in, into the jail. He is
just
shut down from the community. So I don't vote on color. I don't vote on color. Like you said, I want to know, we want it now on paper in writing, that this is what you are committing to do. So it is important. It is very important that we educate ourselves on the candidates that say they want our vote. From now on, you're going to earn our vote. Just a few minutes ago, I just got a call from one of our county commissioners. We had put in a bid for $25,000 for the work that we do in our community. And he just called and told me, he said, well, Diana, you didn't get it. And these are the people that voted against it. But why? When you see us out here working, we are feeding since COVID-19. We have fed over 7,000 families. And you can't give us $25,000 that we can help those young men that are out there trying to hustle just to keep the lights on, just to keep food on the table, just to keep a roof over their head. It's not a lot, but give us something. And they wouldn't even do that. So I told them, I just posted it on my Facebook page, that same note that you voted against us getting some funding, we're going to give that same note back to you at the poll.
I know that's right, because they did a grant for $1.5 million for reentry, and they didn't use the money for that either. So
no,
I'm like, you know, I just can't be a part of what you're doing, because this grant was supposed to help the ex-offender transition back as far as housing. They were supposed to have been buying them a car and you know, just make a smooth transition. But none of this has happened, so I don't know where the 1.5 went. But they were like, don't tell the inmate that. We want to see what he's going to go out here and do. And I'm like, okay, you letting the guy out that's been in prison 25, 30, 40 years. What do you expect him to come out here and do?
Exactly.
But so they give money to the wrong people, to me.
Exactly. And we get, now what has helped us with our Second Chance Alliance here in North Carolina is that we have private donors that have donated and allow us to help with the reentry. We help individuals get, if they're sleeping on somebody's sofa, we help them help pay the rent. We buy cell phones for them. We take them shopping. We make sure that we have all those wraparound services for them. And that does not come from no government funding. That's all private funding.
Well, that may be a good thing, Minister Powell, because then you are in control and they can't dictate what you do. So maybe this money that you didn't get, was that coming from the government or not?
The money that we didn't
get? The $25,000 that you just didn't get.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was coming from government.
Yeah, because they have too much control and stuff. So when they see you trying to do good, that's definitely they not wanting to give that money to something that's going to benefit somebody in order to become successful.
Exactly. There was a saying that my mentor, Mr. Dennis Gaddy, he says the system makes it easy to do the wrong thing and makes it hard for you to do the right thing.
And by you working in the Department of Correction, I know you can agree with that statement.
I can't agree. I agree 100%.
Yeah. So we definitely got to change that around, too, as far as that statement is concerned, because I have seen, I have a prison ministry as well, and I've seen people hope just drained.
I've had an individual that came out, he did 25 years, and at that time there were no cell phones. So when he came out, he got so frustrated, and with the, his probation parole officer on his back, he's trying to navigate this through this thing, not understanding how to even the work of cell phone. He became so frustrated. He just said, "Just take me back and let me do the rest of my time."
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. And we had to call the probation officer and said, "Look, stop, don't be so hard on him. We're working with him. Give us a chance to work with him. If not, he's saying he's ready to go back." And they was like, "No, we can't take him back." And then he said, "Oh, yes, you're going to take me back because either I'm going out here to rob somebody or I'm going to rob a bank. I'm going to do something." So they ended up letting him come in and finish out his 90 days because he couldn't, that pressure was so, it was just so, it was that knee was on his neck. That
yes.
knee was on his neck.
Yes, it was. And, I think the whole purpose of the Department of Public Safety, as they call it now, it's not to protect the public safety. It's a modern-day Jim Crow.
Exactly.
That's my opinion about it. They're getting free labor, just like they did in slavery time. So that is definitely something we need to take a look at. And, my hat goes off to you. I can go in there and do my prison ministry and come on out. I don't think I could be in there to work the amount of hours that you have worked. So my hat definitely goes out to you being on the inside because I just see in the going in doing my ministry how things could get wild sometimes. So just being in there locked behind closed doors with certain people, it would have been a scary thing for me.
Well, if you think about it now, and that's why I pray for those that are working in those capacities because they have to deal with the COVID-19. I'm sure it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of tense moment. I get calls all the time from the inside. Ms. Powell, they're not giving us hand sanitizer. We're not practicing social distancing. They're threatening to write us up. They're threatening to put us in the hole. So it's a lot of tension that's going on in there right now.
Yeah, I can imagine because, this is a strange virus. It's really strange. I think I had it back in March, and it was strange. I've never had anything to attack my body like that. I wouldn't want to put that on my worst enemy. And to know that I have no control of my movements, I'm sure those poor guys are just like, "Oh, Lord, don't let it come in here. Am I going to die?" But according to the stats by the Department of Corrections, Public Safety, everybody know recoup from that. And I can't see that. I can't see how that happened because that's the only place it has happened. You got these individuals dying in rest homes out of the chain, But you have overcome all your inmates that basically had it. You've only had about 4 or 5 deaths in the prison system, and the rest of them has gotten over it. But they haven't put anything out to say how their inmates have overcome this COVID-19. It's amazing to me. If you got the cure for it, you need to be telling us out here so we don't have to be stuck in the house with it.
Exactly.
And afraid to go get it.
Right, and also they're telling them that they're safer in there. You don't want to get out because you're safe.
No, they're not.
Yeah, I know. They're not. And so the judge, now with the lawsuit, the judge has ordered that every one of them has to be tested. And so in some of the phone calls that I've gotten, they have not been tested. And one guy, he got out, he was released. He didn't get the COVID-19 test, but he got a HIV AIDS test before he could come home. But they didn't give him the COVID-19 test.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, that's scary.
That's it.
You want to know if he got AIDS, but you don't care that he might have the COVID-19.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. That is truly mind-boggling.
It makes me wonder, what kind of cloud are these people on? You know, where are they headed at?
You know, they sound like the people I work that call in my center, and I'm like, are you off from another planet, or where did you come from?
Exactly.
But seeing that it's a money-making situation, because I did receive a phone call from an inmate as well, and they were like, they're mad because they got to pay all this money to test these people for the COVID-19. And I'm telling him, well, they need to be thinking about if you die up in there, how many lawsuits they going to have.
Exactly.
And I'm sure that would probably outweigh the amount they're going to have to dish out for this COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. Well, listen, Minister Powell, it was an honor. If you can just give my listeners about 3 nuggets that you can drop on them to how to live a better life, I wish you could do that for me.
I sure will. I've always believed love conquers all. I tell my young people, love yourself, love God, love yourself, and love others. Then you will always come out on top. And for the listeners that have individuals who are incarcerated, write them. Try to put money on their book. Encourage them. Let them know that they got allies on the outside, that we are out here fighting day in and day out for this thing to turn around for their good. And also, again, just love each other, y'all. We got to stop hating on each other. We got to stop backbiting. We got to stop the jealousy. We just got to be kind and love each other and make this world a better place, especially in this season and this climate that we are in. Amen.
Amen. And listen, let my listeners know how to get in contact with you on social media.
I'm on Facebook, Diana Haywood Powell. You can send me a friend. I'm at my capacity. I have 3 pages, Diana Haywood Powell or Diana Powell, or you can go to Just to Serve North Carolina. And I'm there. Also, my number is 919-594-9076. Instagram, Diana Powell.
Well, Minister Powell, I do want to thank you for taking the opportunity out of your busy, busy schedule to do this interview with me today, and I hope my listeners take those nuggets and run with it. And like you say, I'm on a love walk as well, so love is the key. That is definitely the key to change this world around.
Yes, it is. And thank you for having me. It was an honor.
You're welcome. Broadcasting from Bashani Radio, iHeart, iTunes, and Spotify, live from New York City, this is the Linda Monroe Show, and I am Linda Monroe. If you want to know more about me and what I do, go to lindamonroe.com. Again, I want to thank all of my listeners for listening to my broadcast each and every week. And don't forget to go to Google Play and download Bashani Radio. This is also sponsored by Rashad Detail. Also, I got my book out. It's called Overcoming All Odds, The Life I Should Not Have Lived. Go to lindamonroe.com, order your copy. I'll send you an autographed copy. Until next week, you guys stay blessed and be safe out there. And thanks again, Minister Powell. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.